think I need your help. This song ain't gonna write itself. I think I need your help. This wrong ain't gonna write itself. I think I need your help. I wanna be more than you know. I just wanna lose myself, find myself, see myself, be myself, lose myself, find myself. I just wanna lose myself, find myself, see myself, be myself, lose myself, find myself. I wanna be more than myself. I think I need your help. I wanna be more than you know. I wanna be more than myself. I think I need your help.
Welcome to Reparations in Action here on UhuruRadio.com or TheBurningSpear.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. Reparations in Action is the weekly online radio show of the African People's Solidarity Committee and its mass organization, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Organizations of white people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party to win support from other white people for African liberation, self-determination, and white reparations to African people for centuries of slavery and colonial oppression. My name is Jamie Simpson, your host and a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and I am joined in the studio today by the president of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and a member of the Central Committee of the African People's Solidarity Committee, Jesse Novelski. Uhuru and welcome, co-host Jesse Novelski.
Uhuru Jamie, Uhuru Eric, Uhuru Comrade Javon, and to all of the listeners of Reparations in Action here on Uhuru Radio.
Uhuru, yes. I also want to extend our appreciation to Eric Delp, our engineer and a fellow member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and of course to Javon G., the outstanding agitprop coordinator for the African People's Socialist Party, helping us out, bringing this this broadcast live to a live streaming audience as well as online. Uhuru. Uhuru means freedom. And we want to begin, as always, by expressing our profound appreciation to the African People's Socialist Party and the entire Uhuru News Network for giving us this hour from the Solidarity Committee every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in order to bring the message of black power into the hearts and minds of the white community. So, Uhuru, and thank you to the African People's Socialist Party and to Comrade Javon G. Today's show is entitled Gorillagate Exposed. The white world cries over a gorilla's death while it is silent in the face of genocidal assaults on the African community here within U.S. borders and around the world. Most notably, recently here in St. Petersburg, the murders of three African teenage girls Dominique Battle, Ashanti Butler, and Lanaya Miller, three African teenage girls killed by the Pinellas County Sheriff on March 31st, 2016. And we have not seen the same outcry about this murder of three African children that we've seen around the outcry from the white community for this Cincinnati Zoo majestic creature. A gorilla named Harambe was killed by zookeepers when a four-year-old African boy fell into the enclosure where the gorilla was. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is a case of extreme negligence and irresponsibility on the part of the Colonial Zoo. We want to read a piece summing this up because the response from the white community has been white nationalist to the hilt. It has been foul, and it flies in the face of everything we know, working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, working under the leadership of people like Javon G., who just held a show called There Are Two Americas. We unite. We know there are two Americas. We know we do not experience the same oppression that African people do, and that it is not surprising to us that that white people would show more regard for the life of an animal than the life of an African child. There was a petition that went around regarding this incident that happened, I believe, May 28th, 2016. A petition online calling for the arrest of the mother of the young man, Isaiah, the African boy again who fell into this enclosure and was in there for over 10 minutes until the gorilla was killed and the young man was saved. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen African people murdered much more quickly. Within seconds mm-hmm. of arriving on the scene, Tamir Rice was gunned down. Within moments of interacting with Sam DuBose in the same city, Cincinnati, Sam DuBose was murdered for not providing his driver's license quickly enough. And yet 10 minutes went by with this gorilla thrashing this African child around before measures were taken to save the child. And we say that while at the same time we are opposed to the concept of zoos putting on display African culture at the expense of African people. And we think that it's necessary to bring clarity to this issue immediately. And we have an article that the Burning Spear online put out regarding this, and we want to read this so we have clarity that comes directly from the leadership of the Uhuru movement. Jesse Novelski, president of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, would you like to say anything about the white reaction to the death of the gorilla Harambe before we read this powerful piece from the Burning Spear?
Uhuru, this is a good topic to kind of pick apart because there are many, it reveals many things about the nature of colonialism and our relationship as white people to the nature of colonialism and how the system operates, and the fact that it's a system that was born from stealing the resources and land and people mm-hmm. from Africa and kidnapping millions of African people and bringing them to here and other places throughout the world against their will to build this entire economy for the benefit of the general white population, including the theft of animals. And one of the things that we want to say from the Uhuru Solidarity Movement is on the whole question of animal rights, quote unquote, because there has been a massive outcry from a lot of us in the white community about the death of this gorilla. Mm-hmm. And the reality, as this article so succinctly says, that if you care so much about gorillas, then free Africa. Support the liberation of Africa and the return of all of Africa's resources into the hands of African people. Because there were no zoos mm-hmm. in Africa before colonialism. Mm-hmm. The zoo is a colonial invention that is essentially a display case for the stolen loot in the form of these animals, these amazing animals that are stolen from their natural habitat and put on display to entertain white people, generally speaking. So that was the initial shot that was fired. That was the initial criminal assault. And the fact that there is no outrage about that mm-hmm. and that whole context is just taken for granted and accepted as the norm shows that in addition to being extremely hypocritical and suspect that white people would be so upset about the death of a gorilla while having nothing to say in many cases about the outright genocidal mass murder of African people that happens in this country every single day, it's also disingenuous.
Yeah, it really is. It's dishonest. It's hypocritical. And our goal in this show, thank you so much. I fully unite with what you're saying, Jesse Novelski, president. We want to today, as the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, discuss the blame the victim mentality that's so universal in colonial society or white society, expose the hypocrisy specifically around what we're calling Gorillagate. We want to share a video that will highlight the campaign of Justice for Dominique Battle, Lanaya Miller, and Ashanti Butler, and also sum up the recent death of the greatest, the champion himself, Muhammad Ali, what he meant to the African world. And if you would like to call into this program, you can do so by calling 727-565-1599 if you'd like to join in on this discussion. And that is the intent of this show. So that being said, we go now to this article from The Burning Spear entitled, Gorilla Killed in Cincinnati Zoo to Save African Child, White People Blame Mother. June 1st, 2016. This is by David Ascari Sankofa, Cincinnati, Ohio. Isaiah, 3-year-old African boy, fell into the gorilla enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo in Ohio on May 28, 2016. The child is doing fine now after receiving a concussion and minor scrapes. Isaiah was in the gorilla enclosure with a 400-pound teenage lowland gorilla who the zoo named Harambe for approximately 10 minutes before the zoo's animal response team killed the animal with a shotgun. Video footage of the incident shows the animal dragging the little boy across the moat in the enclosure. Witnesses stated that Harambe tossed the boy around. Michelle Gregg, the boy's African mother, is heard yelling her child, "Mommy's right there," and "to be calm" in the video. The Cincinnati Zoo employees shot and killed Harambe and explained in a statement that the gorilla was shot with lethal force instead of a tranquilizer because the child's life was in immediate danger. The whole world has seen this child's traumatic experience with Harambe. The next section is called Gorilla Lives Matter. Colonial or white ruling class media wasted no time in digging up the past of the boy's parents and criminalizing them. White media have brought up the father's criminal past in their efforts to blame him for the death of the gorilla, even though the father was not even at the zoo that day. Members of the white population are, quote, mourning, end quote, the death of Harambe, erecting vigils and protesting at the zoo and making statements like, quote, justice for Harambe, and, quote, all lives matter. Their tears quickly turned into anger as social media users are now making attacks on the child's parents and questioning their parenting skills. White people have even created petitions and Facebook groups which blame the mother for the death of the gorilla. Twitter posts even called for the mother to be shot instead of the gorilla. Where was the outrage for Tamir Rice? Next section. Another city in Ohio, Cleveland, is where 12-year-old Tamir Rice was murdered at a playground by a cop, Timothy Lehman. The murderous cop Lehman was never charged, and the city declared that no wrongdoing took place. The general white population did not mourn the death of Tamir. They did not set up any vigils, Facebook groups, or petitions to charge Lehman for the murder. There were no social media posts calling for the murderous cops to be shot. The gorilla's death has received much attention and outrage, partly because his species is endangered. The zoo expected to start breeding Harambe within a few years and contribute to the species population growth. Where was the outrage over the fact that Tamir Rice, Ayanna Jones, Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, and countless others were not allowed to contribute to the population of African people? Free Africa if you care about gorillas so damn much. The blame for the killing of the gorilla is being misdirected toward African people as usual. Lowland gorillas are indigenous to West Africa. Their natural habitat consists mostly of the Congo, Angola, and the Cameroon regions. The number one threat to their existence is imperialism and parasitic capitalism. The gorillas are endangered because imperialists extract Africa's resources by deforesting the gorillas' natural habitat and draining Africa's timber. The timber from the deforestation is used to fulfill the capitalist desires of the white ruling class. Africa's resources are expropriated, leading to the destruction of its peoples and animals. The primary contradiction that led to Harambe's death is that the white ruling class destroyed his habitat and put him in a zoo to begin with. It is not due to, quote, bad parenting, end quote, as colonial media would like us to believe. African mothers' parenting skills certainly weren't being questioned when they were raising white babies. Zoos operate under the guise of preserving these animals. Zoos emerge and still function, however, as a form of entertainment for white people at the expense of captive wild animals from around the world. Quote-unquote exotic animals for show are a byproduct from the exploitation and destruction of Africa's lands. Harambe the gorilla would be enjoying his natural habitat somewhere in West Africa if imperialism wasn't causing havoc in Africa. Imperialism killed Harambe way before the zoo's staff shot the bullet. White people have no qualms when gorillas are killed in order to preserve their comfort and privilege. When Harambe was killed to preserve the life of an African child, however, they created an uproar. If the white population truly care about gorillas, they will join the fight against parasitic capitalism. Once Africa is free, her animals will also be freed. Iswelenu Africa. Africa is our land. Uhuru in this lifetime. And forgive me for slaughtering the slogan of Africa, the land is ours, of the African People's Socialist Party. Uhuru, that was an article from the Burning Spear newspaper. Jesse Novelski.
Uhuru, I'd like to introduce also into this discussion the name Ota Banga. For anyone who doesn't know that name, please Google it. O-T-A is the first name, last name B-E-N-G-A. Ota Banga, born 1883, was an African man from Congo who was stolen from his homeland by a quote-unquote explorer named Samuel Phillips Verner, who was a white businessman hunting Africans to be displayed at the Louisiana Purchase Exposition in St. Louis, Missouri in 1904. And Ota Banga was later displayed at the Bronx Zoo. And at age 32, Ota committed suicide after, you know, obviously falling into extreme depression from the humiliation that he was subject to throughout his life. So zoos have a very hideous history within the narrative, within the context of the rise of colonial white power, the dehumanization and devaluing of African life, and the theft of Africa's resources, including Africa's people, African people themselves.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing our attention to that, Jesse. I think that we must remember names. Like, could you repeat this African's name?
Yes, his name was Ota Banga.
Ota Banga. Remember Ota Banga. Remember people also who have suffered from this this industry of exploiting African animals and African people. She's known as Sarah Bartman. She lived between 1790 and 1815, is another example of an African seized from the continent, hunted down, and turned into a commodity to be publicly humiliated for the entertainment of white people. Her name is, and forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this, but Sartji Bartman. She's known as Sarah Bartman, however, and she was the most famous of at least two Khoikhoi women who, due to their physical nature were exhibited as freak show attractions in the 19th century in Europe under the name the Hottentot Venus. This is another just hideous example. This is just one of the most famous. There was a struggle in the late 20th century to return the parts of her body that were on display to the family in Africa. They stayed in a British museum up until the year 2000, if I'm not mistaken. It was at least the late 1990s. So an entire show could be done just on that, on the question of the exploitation of African people, the bestialization of African people, and we want to continue to delve into that. But there is so much going on in the world in the midst of white people calling for the death of this African family, of this child who was saved. And I really appreciate the end of the article that the Burning Spear put out that said the main issue here is that it was an African child who was saved. Mm-hmm. The fact that a gorilla was killed, that any measure would be taken to save an African, that's what sparked outrage in the white community. That is sheer white nationalism.
Yeah, if that had been a white kid, no one would be crying crocodile tears for the gorilla. If it had been a white child whose life had been saved.
Mm-hmm. Or at the very least, they would correctly be blaming the zoo. Right. They wouldn't dare blame the parents.
Yeah.
This is something that is unique, a unique inability to see the humanity in African people on the part of white people. And it is not some sort of accident or coincidence. Mm-mm. It is based on our economic system requiring the oppression of African people and other non-white peoples. So we encounter this continuously, and unfortunately we've encountered it particularly around the campaign to gain justice for Dominique Battle, Linnea Miller, and Ashanti Butler. We hear people routinely saying, well, they stole a car. As though, one, if that were even true, it justifies their murder. Mm-hmm. And their horrific murder, being drowned, screaming for help. Here is one African that, surprisingly, this young man, Isaiah, was saved by the colonial system. And this is a rare thing, and we see hordes of white people taking to the internet to protest this. We need to see hordes of white – I think it was something like 100,000 people signed the petition to arrest the African family of this child who fell into an open enclosure – which was irresponsibly left open for a four-year-old to climb into. It really strains revolutionary patience to see this kind of naked white nationalism that even the white ruling class media at a certain juncture this past week had to step in and tone police their own a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not in any kind of on-point way, not in any kind of correct way, but just asking its own enforcers of colonialism to be a little less obvious in their hatred of African people. And that has been the history of this country. The white population has raced out in front of the white state itself to seize land from the indigenous people, to make sure African people remain oppressed, enslaved, and or second-class citizens. And one person who stood for standing up against that, one person who historically shook the world up with regards to the white narrative, departed the earth this week. Mm-hmm. And that is Muhammad Ali. And we want to acknowledge the greatness of his memory, the greatness of Muhammad Ali's accomplishments, both in the ring and outside of the ring. His accomplishment challenging not only contenders like Sonny Liston, the first heavyweight champion who Muhammad Ali defeated to gain the heavyweight championship of the world, but also taking on the white ruling class state itself in refusing to be drafted into the Vietnam War. And we hope to bring you momentarily a couple of clips that really highlight what this athlete, this activist, this leader of African people meant to African people within the U.S. and around the world. Muhammad Ali died June 3rd, 2016, and will be buried in Louisville, Kentucky, with his family. Louisville is the city where Muhammad Ali grew up. He was originally Cassius Clay until he was given the name Muhammad Ali by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. And that is something that Muhammad Ali strategically announced immediately after winning his famous fight against Sonny Liston that first time. And so we really wanted to uphold the memory of Muhammad Ali, what he meant. When he said, "I shook up the world," he meant more than simply shaking up the world of boxing. Jesse Novelski, any words on the memory of Muhammad Ali?
Uhuru, yes, and I know we have some clips. Are we on point to do that? Or okay, so we're going to take a short break after this, I think, just to get some things in place. We have some clips, but Chairman Amalia Shetela led a great study this morning, and he discussed the legacy of Muhammad Ali in some depth. And what the chairman was summing up was that Muhammad Ali was someone who reflected the political character of the African working class during that period, that saw the African working class rising up and pushing the struggle for African liberation from a struggle for civil rights and integration into a struggle for independence and black power. Mm. And that was what distinguished the struggle. That struggle for power was the thing that transformed the black struggle in the United States from a civil rights struggle into an anti-colonial struggle that put it, that liberation struggle, in unity and alignment with all of the other anti-colonial struggles that were happening throughout the world. And the chairman went into a lot more detail, you know, about Muhammad Ali and his relationship to Malcolm X and his relationship to the Nation of Islam, and the fact that you know, the Nation of Islam was not a revolutionary organization, and Muhammad Ali was not himself a revolutionary, but he was someone whose significance in the world, whose stance in the world, reflected that, the political tone of that time in a very obvious way. And he was obviously very bold and very principled with regards to opposing U.S. imperialism and refusing to allow himself to be used as a pawn in U.S. imperialism's genocidal wars in Indochina during that period. So he was definitely a profound figure, and there is a grotesque effort being made right now to whitewash his legacy, to claim that he quote-unquote transcended race and religion when he was very explicitly, uncompromisingly black and Muslim. There was no question about that. He never watered that down. In fact, he lost a lot of money and even the ability to do his job as a boxer because of his inability, his refusal to compromise on his identity, and even demanding that the world call him by his name, Muhammad Ali, as opposed to the slave name Cassius Clay, was something that was very controversial during that time. So I heard that Bill Clinton has been chosen to speak to deliver the eulogy at Muhammad Ali's funeral, and I cannot think of a more projectile vomit-inducing example of the effort to white out in the pastiest way possible the legacy of Muhammad Ali than to have this colonial slave master pig speak at his funeral. So I think these summations and the chairman's summation this morning are really important to restore some clarity on the significance of this figure. Uhuru,
absolutely. And I encourage people to seek out that study, listen to it. It is urgent that we educate ourselves with revolutionary science in this period of the crisis of imperialism and the reemergence of the African liberation movement, which, whether Muhammad Ali was a revolutionary or not, he embodied. Mm-hmm. As the chairman has said before, there are people who embody the times, who just express it perfectly. And I think we see that in Ali, both in his stance with respect to the Vietnam War and refusing the draft, but also the way that he approached the ring, the way that he approached his opponents. And I wanted to give a specific example of that and how I think it mirrors revolutionary struggle and insurgency. That first fight with Liston, the way that he approached it, first with propaganda, the way that he was considered the underdog, and then his tactics physically in the ring. But we do want to momentarily at least break to identify that you are listening to Reparations in Action here on theburningspear.com, also known as Uhuru Radio, the online voice of the International African Revolution. My name is Jamie Simpson, a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and your host. I'm joined by Jesse Novelski, president of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and our engineer, Eric Delp, also a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And we appreciate everyone tuning in. Do we have a PSA queued up that we can go to? Okay, we take you now to this public service announcement, and we will be right back.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant to me. Yes, he's straight out racist, the sucker. airborne plane.
Motherfucking in John Wayne.
Cause I'm black and I'm proud. Already I'm hyped cause I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear in no stamp. Sample look at you looking for nothing but rednecks for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, the act
was a number one jam. Damn if I said you could slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on.
Come on.
What we got to say.
Yeah.
Power to the people, no delay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Us, we're back on. Right. You're listening to Reparations in Action here on theburningspear.com, also known as Uhuru Radio, the online voice of the International African Revolution. And just to remind everyone, Reparations in Action is the weekly program of the African People Solidarity Committee and Uhuru Solidarity Movement, the organizations of white people working under the leadership of the African People Socialist Party for reparations and solidarity with African liberation and self-determination. So we are on this episode today called Gorillagate Exposed, and we're talking about the hypocrisy of white nationalism, the response to Harambe, the gorilla, the absence of a response for so many Africans gunned down by police in Ohio alone. We have Tamir Rice in Cleveland being gunned down within seconds of a cop arriving on a playground, shot for having a toy gun. We have Sam DeBose killed by a University of Cincinnati police. In 2014, I believe, and none of these police are seeing real justice. We're seeing people walk with impunity, and we're not hearing any outcry from the white community about that. Yet we hear this outcry for the heads of the parents of the child who fell into this enclosure at a Cincinnati zoo. So during all this, we want to remind our listeners of the context in which 100,000 people are signing up to call for the death of African parents whose child was saved from the clutches of a gorilla. And during that same week, we lost the champion. We lost the greatest, Muhammad Ali, a young man born with a slave name of Cassius Clay. He rejected that name. He took the Muslim name of Muhammad Ali, given to him by the Nation of Islam, and heroically burst onto the scene. He was not expected to win against Sonny Liston, the champion, and he delivered a devastating, devastating defeat to Sonny Liston in a really heroic manner. We want to play you a sample of the champion himself, speaking for himself. This first clip is, we have one clip featuring Muhammad Ali speaking to the question of the Vietnam War and why he did not accept the draft into that war, and then we're going to play a clip of Muhammad Ali reciting a poem that he coined on an Irish talk show about the Attica uprising.
Defeated Foley by a knockout in the seventh round. Immediately thereafter, he walked into the teeth of a monumental decision. He was drafted, and then he refused induction on the grounds of his religious convictions on war.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality, raped and killed my mother and father. What I'm going to shoot them for what? How am I going to shoot them? Them little poor little black people, little babies and children and women. How can I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail.
While fighting imprisonment for his stand, Ali was also stripped of his title, denied a license to fight in the United States, and denied a visa to go overseas to fight. He was in a much tighter financial bind than most were aware of.
I don't know if I see the world heavyweight champion driving a Volkswagen, guys in the Cadillacs and making fun of you. So I'm working today, I'm hauling, right? I'm And so I had, one day I had to speak at Canisius. Heard of Canisius? Canisius, Ferdinand Dickinson, CW Post. Three colleges at $1,500 a college. Pretty good money. So I broke my wife's piggy bank. She had about $35 in it. $135. I broke the piggy bank to get gas money to get me to the college. And I got enough gas and food money to get the $4,500, the $3,1500 lecture. That $4,500 would hold me, pay gas bills, light bills, till I get to the next college. This went on until that whole mess was over.
Inevitably, students would challenge Ali on his stand and his convictions. Remarkably, Ali more than held his own against students who had a far better formal education than he.
I'm saying, you're talking about me, about some draft, and all of you white boys are breaking your neck to get to Switzerland and Canada and London. I'm not going to help nobody get something my Negroes don't have. If I'm going to die, I'll die now, right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My name is a white people, not Viet Congs or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
That was Muhammad Ali, the champ, talking about his very just decision to not fight against oppressed people in Vietnam. We bring you now another clip from Muhammad Ali on an Irish talk show host reciting a poem that he wrote.
Most of your poems, like the one you spoke a few moments ago, are funny. But you've written one about your own people, I think at the time of the Attica prison riot. It's a serious poem. You have certainly very serious moments, as you've shown us tonight. Could you, before we go, just say that poem for us?
Oh, this poem explains the Attica prison. You heard that over here when all the black prisoners were shot, and just before they held some white hostages, and they said they would cut the throats if they didn't get what they wanted. And the word was, well, if the throats are cut, then shoot and kill everybody. They found out during the autopsy that the throats were not cut. They just shot them for nothing. The trigger-happy policeman, and that Rockefeller gave word 10 minutes or so, if they don't give up, I think it's the way it went, open fire. And one black prisoner came out to speak to the warden, and he said, you have 10 minutes to surrender. What's your reply? Are we going to come in shooting? And the black prisoner came out, poetic poem. This didn't happen, but this is what I wrote. He said, better far from all I see, to die fighting to be free. What more 15 in could be? Better surely than in some bed where in broken health I'm led, lingering until I'm dead. Better than with prayers and pleas are in the clutch of some disease, wasting slowly by degrees. Better than of heart attack are some dose of drug I lack. Let me die by being black. Better far that I should go, standing here against the foe. Is there sweeter death to know? Better than the bloody stain on some highway where I'm lain, torn by flying glass and pain. Better calling death to come than to die another dumb, muted victim in the slum. Better than of this prison rot, if there's any choice I've got. Kill me here on the spot. Better far my fight to wage now while my blood boils with rage. Less it cool with ancient age. Better violent for us to die than to Uncle Tom and try, making peace just to live a lie. Better now that I say my sooth, I'm gonna die demanding truth while I'm still akin to youth. Better now than later on, now that fear of death is gone, never mind another darn. They opened fire on them, but they died telling it like it was.
Muhammad Ali.
Uhuru, So that was Muhammad Ali, the champion, reciting a beautiful poem about the Attica uprisings, the strike, really just demanding humane conditions at Attica, and the slaughter that followed. Wow. Better now than later on. How true. So many skills this heroic individual had, Muhammad Ali, who died at 74 after decades of fighting Parkinson's disease. But that was not his greatest battle. His greatest battle was with white power imperialism and the colonial humiliation of his people, both within U.S. borders and throughout the world. Muhammad Ali was recognized as an African leader. He was distinctly African, black, and proud. He expressed genius both physically and intellectually. And before we turn to a current campaign clip, I just want to encourage people to watch that first fight with Liston, because I think it's significant that Liston did not get up for the seventh round because his arm was displaced. The socket came out of his arm because he was so overextended from trying to catch Ali. He could not land a single significant hit. And it was that continuous, he tired him out so much that he dislocated his shoulder. And that was what finally called the fight. Really brilliant, almost insurgent-like tactics that Ali exhibited both in the ring and outside of the ring. And outside of the ring, what Muhammad Ali struggled for was self-determination and social justice for African people, certainly within the U.S. And right here in St. Petersburg, we have an issue. We have the struggle of justice for Dominique Battle, as well as Ashanti Butler and Lanaya Miller, three African teenage girls who I hope everyone has heard about already. We want to bring you now to this clip made by Comrade Ghazi Kodzo, featuring Yashika Clemens, mother of Dominique Battle, laying out this campaign and how you can support it.
Akwali, y'all. So I'm here with
Yashika Clemens.
And Yashika Clemens is the mother of Dominique Battle, which is one of the three girls that were drowned here by the Pinellas County Police here in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I wanted to make a video with Yashika to get her story out there and to get as much help as we can from the viewers of this video. So please make sure to share the video so we can get as much assistance with this case as possible. So a lot of you probably have seen some of about the case, the video of the police officers just standing there while the three teenage girls drowned went viral and was all over the internet. And I just wanted to talk to Yashika and ask her, you know, first and foremost, you know, what was the relationship between you and your daughter? Y'all got along and everything?
And we had a really good relationship. It was, you know, like a mother and a daughter relationship would be.
Mm-hmm.
We hung out together, we shopped together, you know, we did a lot of things together. And not just me and Dominique, but Lanaya and, you know, as well,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the other girls.
Mm-hmm. So you were really close with Dominique, Lanaya, and Ashanti.
Correct, yes.
And they would spend the night at the house a lot?
They would always be there, you know, sharing each other's clothes, doing each other's hair, you know, mm-hmm. just hanging out with each other generally.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, how did you find out that Dominique passed?
Well, I was at work, mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, police officers showed up to my job, and they were asking me all these questions.
How many police officers?
It had to be like maybe 10 or 15 police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just asking all these questions and stuff, you know, and wanted me to, you know, describe to them how my daughter looked.
Mm-hmm.
And when after, you know, describing them and answering their questions, the officer said, like, he didn't have a care in the world. Like, he didn't care. He was like their dad. And I was like, you know, with her and what happened, and, you know, and asking questions and stuff.
And what did they say when you asked questions?
And it was like, well, we wasn't chasing them at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they claimed they saw them two or three times. Maybe, I believe it was four times altogether that night that they saw them before they took their lives.
And they just kept saying we wasn't chasing them?
That's all they kept telling me the whole time, was that they wasn't chasing them.
So, did you see the video of the police just standing there while the girls were drowning?
I wasn't able to watch the video. Mm-hmm. But family and friends, and even coworkers are telling me, things mm-hmm. like what were in the video and what was going on with the video and stuff.
Mm-hmm. How did it make you feel to know that they just stood there talking casually while your daughter was screaming for help?
It hurts.
Mm-hmm.
To know that nobody really cared for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't mean anything. Like, they wasn't human.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me infuriated that we live in a world like this.
The African people live in this kind
yes,
of world.
This African people where they could just kill us, these peers, these white people. It did not mean anything.
So I know that after that video got released, Sheriff Bob Gaultier and a lot of the other police officers started slandering the teenagers, calling the teenagers, the African teenagers, criminals, and calling the African mothers of these teenagers, bad mothers and all these kinds of things. But a funny thing is that you told me that actually the state wanted you to take custody of one of the girls before, right?
Yes.
So it's funny that the same state that's calling you a bad mother now is the state that wanted you to take custody of, which one was it, Ashanti?
It was Ashanti.
Wow. So how did you feel seeing in the newspaper and standing in the radio and the TV them calling, your daughter a criminal?
I was pissed. How dare y'all sit there and try to put a label on these girls just to justify the fact that y'all murdered them?
Mm-hmm.
How can y'all do that? How can y'all sit there and over
mm-hmm.
and continue on with y'all lives like y'all didn't take three lives?
Mm-hmm.
And it pisses me off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to sit there and the first thing you do is you slander their names. You make them look like they were just bad kids, and they're not. Mm-hmm. They're very good kids. They're very smart mm-hmm. and very bright, and they,
she was a good big sister.
She too. Was. She loved mm-hmm. her brother and her sisters,
mm-hmm.
and she was always helping, not with just her brother and her sister, but other family member kids and people in the neighborhood with their kids and stuff as well.
You know, I find funny is that they want to dig up all this stuff on these three teenage girls, but nobody's digging up anything on the police officers that were there. Like police officer Howard Skaggs, who murdered a young teenage African a couple years ago by drowning him in a pond. Why isn't Bob Gaultieri, Sheriff Killer Bob, digging up those kinds of things? He's only digging up on the young African girls. And he actually said this, you guys. He said the only criminals that night were those three girls. There was a known murderer out there. That's the real criminal that was out there. And I'm sure if we dig up the other 10 cops or whatever that was out there's files, that they've murdered, abused, and arrested African people. And actually, Howard Skaggs, the same officer that said the pond was too dangerous, he hopped in a pond to save a dog before, at night. But he couldn't hop in the pond to save an African girl. And he murdered an African teenager another African teenager a couple years ago by drowning him in a pond. So it's just crazy how, they want to point at the victims and make the victims the villain. And the villains become the heroes. These officers were called heroes. And they lied and said that they went into that water and saved the girls. It's because this video leaked that showed, that these officers just stood there. And then they want to talk about, this car, the stolen car and everything. You can't charge dead people. So there was no stolen car. And the person that was supposedly reported it stolen has vanished. This African man who was in his 35, nobody can find, right? And he was with these 15 and 16 year old girls at 4 a.m. And if you know anything about Pinellas County, you know that there is a large human trafficking stings always happening around here. So it's just crazy. This whole thing is just nothing, but it just reeks of state violence against African teenagers, and this is colonialism. This is the existence of African people, and it leaves the loved ones, it leaves African people mourning and hurt, and these children who had futures and who had dreams and who were loved by their community and did so much for their brothers and sisters are now gone. So I just wanted to ask you, what are your demands for this case?
to have Killer Bob resigned. We have to get him out of office. Mm-hmm. And those police officers, those 10 to 15 police officers that stood around that night and listening to them calling out for help, they need to be killed. They need to be, those are the ones that should be out. Mm-hmm. And they should be in prison and behind bars. Mm-hmm. And we need to get reparations for the, not just myself, but for the other two families as well. Mm-hmm. And we need to get Black community control of the police.
Mm-hmm. And also, I want to know, why did you decide to work with the Uhuru movement?
The Uhuru movement is a justified movement. They're out to get justice. They understand that Africans have been getting murdered for centuries, for years, by cops. And, you know, and they understood me, and they knew, and they was there for me before I even was able to go about getting justice for her. They were already out there, you know, in the streets and putting out flyers and getting justice mm-hmm. for them. And that's the type of movement I want to be with.
A hero. And you're the type of mother we want to be with. You're the type of comrade that I want to be with, a fighter. So I wanted to make this video, and also Yashik and I wanted to ask everyone to help in any way they can. The two best ways to help with this case is, first, if you can go to the GoFundMe, which is Justice, the number 4, Dominique.com. Justice, the number 4, Dominique.com, and it'll take you to the GoFundMe where you can donate. And this helps with the campaign. It helps raise money so we can send Yashika out so she can tell her story. We need help with the banners, with the leaflets. And talking about the leaflets, the second way you can help is by passing out leaflets in your own neighborhood. And you can do that by emailing justice, the number 4, Dominique@gmail.com. And the leaflets look like this. And then they open up and tells the entire story about what happened that night. And it tells you about Dominique and her mother and how you can assist us. So Yashika and I go out every other day, and the Uhuru movement goes out every other day with Yashika to pass out these leaflets and put them all around the community. And we would love for y'all to join in wherever you are. If it's in America, if it's in Europe, if it's in Australia, wherever you are, if you could do this, just email justice, the number 4, Dominique@gmail.com. Email your name and your city that you are emailing from, and we will email you this, and you can take it to Kinko's or Office Depot, even print it in your own printer in black and white, and start passing them out and helping get justice for these three girls. So the last thing I want to say is thank you so much for being here, Yashika. And what do you want to tell Bob Gutierrez?
I want you to know, Bob, that we are coming for you. You took 3 lives that night. And you act like you don't have a care in the world, like you don't have a responsibility to live up to this. We're coming for that ass. And you are going to be held accountable for that, because you did something that can never be replaced. You want to talk about it because of a car, but you took 3 lives. Mm-hmm. Lives that can't be put back together. Families that are torn apart because of this. Friendship that's been lost because of this. So you created this hell that we're going to release on you.
Uhuru. And we just cannot say enough about how much we admire and respect the stance of Comrade Yashika Clemens, tirelessly forwarding justice for her own daughter, for the other two young women murdered by the Pinellas County Sheriff, and the entire African community. If you would like to support this campaign, you can go to Justice, the number 4, Dominique.com. That's justice for Dominique.com. And we have other ways that you can participate in this. The first and foremost thing, before I hand the mic over to Jesse Novelski, president of USM, is to become a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement by going to uhurusolidarity.org/join-USM. And Jesse Novelski.
Uhuru. So we call on all white people to support this campaign. We have a responsibility to put our full energy behind this campaign and call for other white people to end our complicity with the violence by the police and this system against African people, and to support Yashika Clemens and the Uhuru movement in this struggle. And you can join our Wednesday night meetings to learn how you can build an event or otherwise organize in your city in solidarity with this campaign. Email us at info at uhurusolidarity.org, and we will send you the call-in information for the Wednesday night meetings. Uhuru.
Uhuru, thank you so much for tuning into Reparations in Action. Uhuru means freedom. We'll see you next week. Thanks to our engineer, Eric Delp and Jesse Novelski. Uhuru means freedom.
Get our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best to
got to pay back.